Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Michigan Avenue Media and the World of Ink Network. This podcast was founded in 2011 by Marsha Casper Cook and Virginia Grenier. Their focus has always been on helping writers reach their dreams by having informative and entertaining shows. You will also hear the latest information on what's new and exciting in the publishing and marketing industry. And the shows will also cover discussions on screenwriting, audiobooks, and movies. New to the shows will be the latest style and trends in fashion, as well as nutrition, and how Pinterest can add just the right spark of attention you may need for your projects. So, sit back and relax and enjoy the show. You can find out more information about our shows and being a guest at www.michiganavenuemedia.com.
Hi, everybody. It's Marsha, and here we are again. We're all sheltered in. Actually, the two guests that I have on, they're in shelter in, too. So we're all here, and nobody was late because we have nothing else to do. We're just waiting for things to open up. But anyway, I hope everybody is staying safe out there and well, and hopefully soon this will be a distant memory, but I don't know about that yet, but I'm hoping everybody tries to stay well. It's very hard, but, you know, and being sheltered in, I think was a really good, you know, thing to do. So even though who would have thought we could all be in, which is very strange. And I'm going to let each of them, we have Dick Belsey and Fran Lewis on today. Each of them will tell you a little bit about what they do. And it's going to be, as you know, we're going to talk today the impact of on authors and reviewers about the COVID-19, but we're also going to talk about many other things because mostly everything that's going on in life has something to do with that. Regardless of where you live, this is what's happening in the USA. So I'm going to let Fran say hi to everybody because Fran doesn't come on shows very often. So I said, Fran, come on the show and talk about other things All right, Fran.
I'm here.
How are you?
There's like an extra sound. I have like an echo on my phone. I don't know why. I still hear the introduction somehow. Yeah. Okay,
yeah.
I'm me. I'm Fran Lewis.
I think
I'm a reviewer.
Nice.
And then, do you hear it?
Yeah. No, I don't hear it. So it's.
I hear it. That's okay.
I'm
a reviewer.
Do you
I'm
hear it?
Author,
do you hear it, Dick?
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do.
I don't hear. I don't hear an echo, but I'm getting a little bit of static, but no echo.
Yeah. Fran, you had that today on the show? You had that problem? Yeah.
I had a problem getting on the studio, and my computer hates me, so I have no idea what the problem is. And I'm on line one, but I'm not on speakerphone or anything like that.
Yeah, maybe they're having some, well, why wouldn't everybody be having issues? I don't even know what
to say anymore. I have no idea.
I'm glad you came on the show because, you know, we hear you ask questions and talk to people all the time. So tell everybody a little bit about what you do and what you did before this so people know.
Well, for 36 years, I was a reading and writing staff developer and worked with children with learning disabilities. Had my mother not gotten diagnosed with Alzheimer's, I probably would have been the principal or hopefully superintendent of the schools because that was my goal. I like to review books. It's a lot of fun. I love to promote authors and help them, but I won't write a negative review, not ever. If I feel like a book is not 3.5-4 stars, I just write a summary. I'm the editor of MJ Magazine, and hopefully after this nightmare pandemic is over, I'm going to write another issue of it. Hopefully everybody will contribute something, maybe even talk about their experiences. So that's basically what I did for 36 years. I taught children from every single grade, from grades K to high school with learning disabilities. Right now I'm the family and friends homework helper. If anybody needs help in writing or reading, I got called at 2 o'clock this morning to help my nephew do something online. But, yeah, I do reviews. I interview people. And I've authored, and I don't know why no one, you know, too many people aren't taking me up on it, to do online interviews with anybody who wants to do question and answer or online interviews. I can promote your book. So that's basically me today, I think.
Do you think people, you know, don't want to interview any. I mean, you say I'm surprised that they're not wanting to do interviews, especially now. So
not interviews on my radio show. I'm booked until the end of October.
No, that I know, but you mean regular. Well, right. Well, that's true. You know, I don't love them either. So, all right. What can I say?
No, I have the. I said, if anybody has questions that I've asked them, you know, on a show and they want to answer them, I did that with Alan Tedeschi, the interpreter, and he took me up on it, and I've been promoting his book. I mean, I do, if I have a show and Dick knows, I'll just promote everybody all day long and tell everybody to listen. And as a matter of fact, yesterday I must have put, I don't know what I put on, just reviews on my site, and I got an email from them. There were 75 people that read the review and followed me out of nowhere.
Well,
that's the other thing.
You don't always know. You don't know who's. You don't. Sometimes you actually don't know who's listening or who's listening. You know, listening or also who's looking at your things. All right, let's have Dick. How are you? I'm so glad to have you on. And you have a new book coming out. I know.
Right. It's Dick Belsky. I write under R.G. Belsky, and the book is called The Last Scoop. And it will be out, which I realized it'd be out May 5th, which I suddenly dawned on me today as a week away from today. You know, because like many of us, I think, you know, time has sort of stopped for us. You know, we don't really know when it is or what day. But the book will be out next week. And, based on the title, obviously, The Last Scoop, it's about the media and journalism. And my character is a TV newswoman here in New York. For people who don't know, my real career before I did all this is working as a journalist. So I worked in the New York media for a lot of years at the New York Post, New York Daily News, and NBC News. And so now I write novels and try and put some of the exciting events that happened and fictionalize them a bit and put them in my books.
Well, that is what makes your story so interesting because. You know, I was listening. I like to listen to the books on Audibles. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, when I'm listening to you, you know, when you do first person and you do a female character, that's really hard to do a great female. I mean, because I particularly like the parts when you are saying what the woman is thinking, and this is exactly how women think. So
not all my characters have been, but the current character I write is a woman journalist, and I write in the first person mainly because I'm more comfortable writing in the first person. To me, it's more powerful, and I can say things that you can't do in the third person. In fact, when I read books, I actually prefer books in the first person in general. One of the reasons that I've written about women characters in the media is, like, I've known so many great ones. So over the years I've worked, and, I'm old enough that I go through all the way back to the part where, it wasn't very fair being a female reporter or journalist because you got, you didn't get the good assignments, and, it wasn't like today. And so women had to really overcome an awful lot. And I knew a lot of those women who did some great work at the New York Post back in the 70s and 80s. And so I absorbed a lot of that and just felt that makes the character even more interesting than just, in many cases, a guy. The very first book I ever wrote, the very first novel I ever wrote many years ago, I started off with a male character, and a woman read it, and she said, wouldn't it be interesting if you made that a woman? And I switched the character, and the book sort of came alive, So I've done both, but it's interesting, and like I say, I've known an awful lot of women in the media, and I've taken a lot of those stories and put them and all these women, of course, then say to me, "Oh, that's me you're writing about," and I'll have to say, "No, it's partially you. It's an awful lot of people that's put together."
Yeah, because and even the thoughts of a woman, like when you were describing a closet and you mentioned the shoes, and Fran knows I have a character that does like shoes and stuff like that, and so it's just those little extra things that gets the reader involved, which I don't find sometimes other people do.
And I'm very aware.
First person. Yep. You are.
And I'm very aware. I'm very aware in writing it, you know, of the potential dangers or pitfalls of writing something that doesn't sound right, you know, in terms of like what a woman would say or do. And fortunately, my first reader is my wife, and you know, so she'll give me the tell me stuff about, you know, and my editor is a woman, and my agent is a woman. And so there are times they will say to me, I don't know if, you know, a woman would say this or do this in quite this way, and I almost always will listen to that. But in general, in the big picture, you know, one of the great things I've been happy about is so many women have said to me, like, "Wow, I really like the way you write about women." You know, so that to me is a compliment. Now, and having said that, like I said, my last series, which I did in 2015 through 2016, involved a male reporter, so I can write both.
But a lot of times people can't write both. Okay, Fran.
Yes.
You write a little bit of everything, and you have a magazine. You didn't mention that. So you have a new book that is going to come out soon, also, right?
We think. We hope. As soon as I figure out a title, it's something I've never done before. The stories are so offbeat that they don't even belong together. it's just a bunch of scary stories that I decided to cook up instead of writing my Faces Behind the Stone series. They're also in the first person, because the truth is I hate writing quotation marks and dialogue and periods and commas and stuff like that. I mean, I don't want to be bothered with that. It's so much easier just to let the character speak. So, I mean, one story is called Journey to Nowhere. There's another one that's called A Crime Pays If You Could Get Away With It. I mean, they're just different. I have no idea what I'm going to call it. One is called 2050, Another Other World. And the last one is called...
So you just wrote them, and then whatever it is, it is. You're just letting it go.
Yeah, I mean...
Whatever comes to mind.
I have no idea what I'm going to call it. I've been, you know, worked up some titles. I sent it to my nephew yesterday. I said, "What do you think?" He said, "I want to read it, but I have no idea what you should call it." I don't know. The last story is more like a Twilight Zone kind of thing. It's called The Confinement, about somebody that's afraid to come out. It's not about the pandemic, and I just ended it as something I saw on the Twilight Zone one day when there was a group of people sitting in a restaurant, and at the end of it, this call comes out, and I won't tell you how I ended it, but we'll see what my editor says. Hopefully she won't hate it. But I still have no idea what I have.
Sometimes what's happening now, it's like when I woke up to this morning in Chicago, it was so foggy. There was like, and you couldn't see anything, and there's no movement, and it's like this is the Twilight Zone. I mean, or something. I don't even know what we can call this, because it's very, very strange. I know, Dick, you were mentioning something before we got out. You write at places. And I do the same. I go to coffee places.
Yeah.
So how are you doing during this?
Well,
time
it's
now?
Yeah. So it's cause it's funny because people say to me, "Oh, wow. Well, at least you have all this time on your hands, so you must get a lot of writing done." As if like, yeah, it's a good thing that you're stuck in my New York City apartment. And for me, it's a tough thing because. I'm one of these people, probably because I worked in newsrooms all my life with busy people screaming and yelling and throwing phones and everything. I really have always written in public. Now, I work, you know, like I'll work on a manuscript, editing and stuff, maybe at home. But when I'm writing, when I'm trying to be creative, I don't write on a computer. I have a legal pad and a pen, and I go places. And like you
That's
said.
That's what I do. I do
coffee,
the same.
Coffee,
I do exactly
coffee
that.
Shops. Coffee shops are like great, you know, but also I've written on the beach, I've written you know on park benches with people around, I've written in bars, I've written on the subway, and so that's there's something about the energy of having people around that always inspires me to write, and so in terms of being creative. Being stuck inside a house is not a helpful thing. Fortunately, in my case, I had just finished my next book, when this whole thing started. So, you know, I'm hoping by the time I'm actually seriously writing again that, you know, hopefully we will be somewhat back to some version of normal. Now, the one thing that it is good for is things like this, because I'm home, I have a lot more time and a lot more interest,
obviously.
And promoting the book and sending emails to people and talking to people on social media and all this stuff. Like, I even updated my website, which, as you know, probably as an author, is, you know, a lot of us get behind. So, you know, I was able to update that and do all that stuff. So it's not always what people think, but for all the people who think that, wow, you must be doing a lot of writing because you're home. I'm doing less writing probably now than I would be if I was able to go out and do things.
Yes. Yeah, and, well, for me, I know I do better when I have a lot of things going at the same time. I'm not great when I don't. So I'm fine. My husband, he's working from home, and I'm walking back and forth. I'll do this. I sit down, then I go do a load of laundry, then I go have some coffee. And I find myself just doing that. But I'm also, at the end of the day, a lot more tired because I'm going like, well, what did I even do today? I did stuff, but I don't even – and when you said you don't – the date – one of my friends said to me the other day, she goes, well, I said, well, you know, today we did this, whatever, and it's, you know, Sunday. So she said, it's Sunday. I go, no, it's Saturday. She goes, really? She goes, oh, yeah, you're right. You know, it's because I think it doesn't, it's just weird because then you go, like, what day did I go to the grocery store? Wednesday?
You have to think about anything. And, you know, the other thing about this, and I don't know if you share this or not too, Marcia, is that when I'm writing, I really relish a routine. So, I mean, I pretty much do the same thing every day. I write in the morning because I'm a morning person. So I get up early and I'll jot some stuff down. Then I'll go out and I'll spend, you know, maybe a few hours, you know, writing and trying to come creative. And it's a routine. You know, I am not happy unless I'm out of the house early someplace trying to come up with something. And then later I come back and I'll try and put it on the computer and do all this stuff. But I have a ritual. I have a routine of how I work. And this, obviously, as it has with a lot of things, has taken me out of that and changed that. So that becomes a problem.
Well, Fran, you're in the house a lot. I could never do what Fran does. Fran, you could read many books. I can't believe it. Okay, so did this affect you at all?
Chair.
I mean, believe it.
It does. I have to get up and I have to get out. I have to walk. If I don't have air, I get really nasty. I have to have air. I have my little reclining chair. But you see, where other people type on their computers, I found a way around not having to go to my computer until I'm seriously ready and I have a discussion where they're telling it not to delete my book review after I write it, which it does a lot.
Yeah.
So I type it on my notepad on my phone.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I email it to myself so I don't lose it. Then I email it to myself again so I really don't lose it. Then I put it on my computer and I save it 27 times, literally, so I don't lose it. Then I pray to God that I remember which one I want to post, and I post usually say, like the last scoop, real one, post on Tuesday. Don't forget to do that. And it's just, then when I go to look for it, I go, I can't find it anymore.
I know.
Yeah, I have my chair, and my chair is very comfortable. And but if I don't get out 2 hours a day, either to walk around or we don't take a ride, I can't handle it. And what's happening now is that the books are not coming. And I had 30 requests, I counted, in the last 2 weeks from publicists and authors to do book reviews, and only two came. And I finished one in an hour and a half. It was really good. And I'm reading one about a girl that was on Facebook that she was addicted and on drugs. It's called Strung Out by Erin Carr. And that's kind of hard to read. But the books are not coming. They're hard to get in print. More requests for interviews and stuff like that, but it's hard because the authors, the publicists are getting PDF and digital, and Fran won't read those, and NetGalley. I have to have the book in front of me because of whatever reason. It just bothers my eyes.
Yeah.
So I've learned that it's getting harder. And then I think something that happened, and I won't say who did this because you're going to know who it is, Dick. Somebody asked, somebody asked me to review a book, and I said, are you sure you really want me to review it? I was really incensed. And the person said, we really want you to review this book. It's great. We want you to come back on board. I said, only if you really want. And I was really polite, and I said, okay. 3 weeks later, yesterday, I said, I just want you to understand the reason I didn't review the book is because I didn't get it. She says, well, we ran out of some. I said, there's always Amazon. I said, but don't worry about it. I've got plenty to keep me busy. I was like, excuse me?
Okay, I actually really wonder why. I think, I know we can't go out, so like my husband will go downstairs and he'll get the mail. And I'll go, what, do you have mail? Mm-hmm. And he says, well, he'll bring up one little thing. I go, what? I mean, because, I think a lot of them are getting sick, and I think they have cut the service, and, you know, they work so hard. You know, they're even delivering stuff on, you know, when people started to be working for the post office, they did not count on everybody ordering things from shopping and all the stores, and they use the post office. So a lot of it comes that way, QVC, you know, HSN, all these stores. So they are really, really busy. So if they cut them and if they're sick, it's probably too hard. I mean, they can't get it all done.
And let me just say from
the
go ahead.
Well, but from the other side of this too, in terms of what Fran was just talking, and you know, Fran and I have had this discussion about print books, and I know that's what she, and she's not the only one. There's a lot of people that you try and get the book to, and you say, well, I can, you know, and my publisher will be, well, we'll send them a digital thing, and they're like, no, I only want to read print. I mean, you know, there are a number. I'm sort of in between. I'm old thing, but I can read, you know, online too. But in this time, it is really difficult. And just me personally, for instance, I did a book giveaway recently, and I got like three winners, and it was through Fresh Fiction, which is a site that did it. And they said, well, here are the three winners, and I'm like, you know, I have to send them the books, and I can't do it. And I just wrote back and I said, look, I have a problem because I cannot go to a post office in New York City right now. I mean, it would be a really you know, serious beyond anything that I'm doing because I'm basically staying confined. And the last thing that you want to do is go into a post office and stand in line to deal with people. And everybody was cool. So I had to write emails to these people and say, look, I'm really sorry, but you'll get the book as soon as, you know, I'm able to do it. But even my publisher has this same situation because when I'd spoken to them at one point and somebody very important wanted to get a review copy, and I said, and they were able to do it. But even them, they basically say, well, look, unless it's really urgent, can you just convince them to take digital? Because, you know, they have to go out of their way to try and mail a book in a very difficult situation too. So I just think the mailing of print copies is, you know, unless you're ordering them, you know, online from, you know, one of the stores or something, it's very hard. Now, on the other hand, the ebook situation is great because you can order an ebook if you can do it. And I'm reading, you know, some ebook stuff now. And I'm one of those people who, once I sort of discovered ebooks, I sort of now like them because you said, Marcia, you like the audio. The great thing about ebooks is you can do so many things. You know, and the main thing is you don't have to carry books around. So if you go on a trip, you can have 10 books on your iPad or your Kindle, and you don't have to carry a lot of books. So, I mean, those are all the things that people are dealing with.
I keep telling,
right now.
I know, because I tell Fran also, I always say to Fran, just try an audiobook, please. Because I think it's such a great experience. And, you know, it's just so relaxing, like, because you're not looking at anything and you're not looking, you know, I've mentioned this many times on my shows because, you know, people really love to find, like, oh, this person didn't put a comma in or they didn't do anything. You know, they didn't get they didn't put the paragraph, something happened.
Right.
When you're in an audiobook, you're just listening, you know? And I think for authors out there, especially new ones, if they listen to books on tape, I think it's really a good experience to learn how to write well. Because sometimes, you know, like let's say in your book, or like when you explain something, like a lot of times they say, oh, you don't really want to write just what the room looks like.
Right.
But you do really want to write what the room looks like, because when you're listening to it, you're going, oh, okay, this is what it looks like, okay? And the closet has a lot of clothes in it or whatever, and you understand where they are, and I think that's a good thing. But when you, sometimes in a book people tend to skip things, but when you're listening to it, it comes alive. For me,
it's like watching a TV show or a movie. And
yeah,
I have
well,
to tell
why,
you
yeah.
one of the coolest things in the world that you know I have found is listening to, like in my case, a woman reading, being my character in an audiobook, because it's, you know, she's speaking in a woman's voice, but she's speaking my words, and you're hearing your
that's
words.
Right, that's probably
and it's
strange,
weird
right.
because
yeah.
it's
yeah.
almost like you're hearing them from somebody else, but they're actually your
yeah.
words, and it's a very interesting thing if you've written a book to actually, I guess it would be the equivalent of seeing it on a screen or something in TV
yeah.
or movies,
yeah.
but then they probably change
yeah.
it. This is, they're actually reading the book the way you wrote the book, so.
I know, you know, but you know that in I have a book called To Life. It's a Holocaust survivors book, and I this was the last book I had somebody do as an audio book, and I when she sent it to me, I'm thinking, oh my God, this sounds really good. She must have added something to the book, you know, because why? Oh, it sounds, you know, it, I didn't remember actually doing that, and then I started and I looked at it. Took a copy of the book. I went, oh my God, those are my words, because I'm thinking, oh, it's the way she was saying it. And it matters a lot. And I made several mistakes,
yeah.
which I have mentioned. I think in audiobooks, if the voice does matter. And it's not that I don't like the voices that did it. I think I should have done it in a little different way. But once you're with Audible, it's for many, many years. So it's okay, but the next one. But it is weird when you hear the voice and, you know, you
yeah.
hear your words. And it's almost like you didn't write it sometimes. And it's like, oh, okay. You know, and
yeah.
then you realize
well,
it is your words.
Well, I think also, and as an author, the further you get, like when you've written a book, and then you've read it, like, you know, 50 times or whatever, you know, at some point it all, like, starts to, you know, sound the same to you, and it's very hard to put
yeah.
it in perspective. But when you
yes.
step back, and I found this not just, like, listening to Audible, but if you go back and look at something you wrote a long time ago, maybe, and you'll pick it up, and sometimes you'll cringe when you see it, and you'll say, ooh,
oh, yeah.
I
mm-hmm.
could do better. But other times I'm actually like, wow, I wrote that. Wow, that's pretty cool. I can't believe I don't remember how I wrote it or why, but I'm actually impressed by myself, you know. But I think anything that takes us away from what we wrote or separates us a little bit, whether it be Audible
yeah.
or
yeah.
time or whatever, really makes a difference. And this is coming from somebody, not my current book, but I just turned in my next book, which will be out in 2021. And, you know, there comes a point where you've read it so many times, and I'm sure you both have gone
yeah.
through
oh,
this,
yeah.
that it's like you don't even know what you're reading anymore because it's just,
right.
you know, you've gone through it so many times.
Fran, do you go back and read it and read?
I try not to read what I write. This way I won't hate it. No, I'm serious.
I know.
Which is the reason why I can't use an Audible, because I need somebody to be dead on the other end of the phone. And they have to be a dead person. And they have to convince me why they should stay alive at the end of the story. So basically I write it. And then I tell Maxine to read it. And then after she sent it to me and I correct my mistakes, I also have a process, because I told her, please don't tell me how many grammar mistakes I have, because I know I corrected them. You fix them and just tell me what the content is that I have to fix, because
yeah.
I don't want to be bothered with commas and periods and stuff like that. But I do read it over eventually. And then
yeah.
I ask my cousin to read it over. And then I ask, my husband won't read what I write. He never does. I don't know why. And he just doesn't like, I don't even know. My nephew read one, and he said, oh, my God. I go, yeah, okay, never mind. And my cousin edited one book for me, and somebody else edited another one. But I'm waiting for Maxine to see just how many, you know, errors I have. But she corrects my grammar, because I don't want to be bothered. I can't. And as far as audibles, it's not that I don't want to listen to an audible. I can't do an interview after doing an audible. I have to have the book in front of me, so that, like this morning, I wanted to add something to Gabriel Vachon was on, and
yeah.
I wanted to make sure that I got all of the characters right. So if I had the book in front of me, I could at least say, well, uh-oh, I'm running out of questions or something. Or what was the chapter I wanted to write about? And it's probably got a circle around it, an X's, because I destroy the book. No, seriously, I do.
Mm-hmm.
So, Don't be surprised.
Yeah, I think, you know, right. You know, I think, and during this time, you know, so, Dick, do you think, my other show last week, I think we were talking about the fact of some of us that are authors think that some of our writing will change by the COVID, you know, virus. Do you feel like you've changed at all in your thinking, or maybe some of your writing will be different in some way?
I don't. You know, I did an interview about this a few weeks ago with somebody who, it was a series of authors, and how, you know, how we're, you know, a lot of questions about the virus and how it affects us. And I mean, my answer would be no. I can't imagine how. And the second part of that, which is the other thing everyone always wants to know, is would you be writing about it? And I really wouldn't want to, you know.
No.
In
no.
the same
yeah,
way
right.
that, you know, like, look, I mean, there's certain things that you cannot avoid in your books, but to me, the books
yeah.
that I write and other people write, they're like an escape from things. They're like fiction.
Right.
They're like
right.
an imaginary
yeah.
world.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And this is such a serious thing. I mean, the thing I would compare it to would be like 9/11. I mean, I know people have written books about 9/11,
yeah.
but I've never really, I mean, I've mentioned it in books.
Yeah.
I know there are just some topics like this that I think, I mean, there's a couple things, one of which is it's just they're very painful. There's no real upside to writing about them. They're just very difficult to write
right.
about.
Right, I don't think it would.
I don't
right.
want to do
right.
it.
Right, yeah.
And,
yeah.
And the other thing about these things is, and I hope this is true with this thing, a lot of these things are very pegged to a point in time. So in the best of all possible worlds, a year now, if I wrote a book, a year or
right.
two now from now when this book came out, hopefully this would all be behind us. There'd be a vaccine, and people wouldn't
yeah,
be worried
see, that's
about
the
it.
Thing.
It would
right,
seem
right.
very dated.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. I have, like, a lot of times when I wrote something in a screenplay, and then should I change it? Because that, as far as, you know, like, should you say Uber, should you say Lyft, or should you say taxi? I say taxi now because I figure there's still taxis anytime
yeah.
from the very beginning of time till now. So... like you may say Uber and they'll go like what's that, you know, but
yeah,
taxi
yeah.
will be the same, you know. A phone, it is a very different thing because the phone, I mean, I notice there's a lot of movies in older movies you watch and you're going yeah that would have, look how long it took them to piece everything together, but if you had a phone you just call it in or something, you
well
know? And
yeah, this is another whole issue though, and this is something
yeah,
that I have to deal with a lot, which is the technical aspects of the media. So we've got Twitter and, you know,
right.
Snapchat and, you know, everything,
yeah.
you know, Instagram,
yeah.
And the whole world is different. So it's so much different than writing a book, you know, like one of the older books about a reporter where
right.
a guy goes to a
yeah.
payphone
yeah.
and calls
yeah.
it in and he has to go to the library to get information, and I've
right.
read books like
right.
that.
Right.
And
right.
you
yeah.
have to do this balance, which I try and do. You have to do this balance
yeah.
between including some of this, but not too much, because first off,
yeah.
it
I
all
agree.
Moves so
yeah.
fast, a lot will be outdated. But
yeah.
I always say that my admiration, the one person that I thought really was figured out the best way to do it was the late, great Sue Grafton. So she set all the Kinsey Malone books, you know, in that period, I guess it would be like the 80s, before there was like an internet, before there were cell phones and all that. So, you know, it's like Kinsey was just doing the job the old-fashioned way, but it made sense because of the times, you know, the time it was set in. So if you
yeah.
set your book, that's it. That's one way of doing it, and I know other books that have been like this. So if you set your book in the 70s or the 80s or something like that, you can get around all that. But I've never done that. I've always written contemporary,
yeah.
and you do run into the issue of having contemporary problems. The other one I have is that, you know, my last character was about a newspaper reporter at the New York Daily News, and the New York Daily News almost went under. In fact, it's still a very struggling paper. And then suddenly you're caught up in all this. Well, wait a minute. In real life, the paper that my character works at may not exist anymore. Then what I do with
I
my
know.
Character in the novel, you know. So you run into a lot of real-life problems like that.
Yeah, I think that's a problem. Right? So that's the only thing I could say. You know, for me, as writing about this, no, I don't think so, because I may have a character that was maybe running, you know, leaving town or something because, let's say that they just, you know, had worked on it and they needed a break or something like that. But I don't think I'll be writing on that. And Fran, you agree on that? You probably won't either.
I won't write on it at all. No,
yeah,
it's too
right. yeah.
Yeah. You have to really be careful when you write in, because people that are going to write on it, this is just my opinion, are going to get too political. And they're going to write different points of views about different people. And I just really wish they would let my hairdresser do my hair. Just throw that in seriously. Because
we all need work on our hair, believe me.
It's upsetting to know that he's busy cooking on the internet. If you see Louis Fader, you know that's my hairdresser cooking and making these delicious things that I can't eat anyway. But, I think I can't write about something like that. It's too personal, too sad. And I would hope that when this is done, everybody would write something, you know, more like they like to, but something a little happier, something that will make people want to smile.
Yeah, you know, look at they, right. This is I do change, as everybody knows. In the last 10 years of shows, I go, I'm going to do this, and I go, oh no, wait a minute, I'm not going to do that. I decided, oh, maybe I'll have a political show or two, and then so I had one, and then I made the decision, no, I'm not having one. I had one, and I'm thinking, like, because I do change my mind a lot, because I just, you know, I go with the flow, but then sometimes I decide, you know, I didn't like the idea that I came up. It's my idea, so when it's my show, I'll do it. I'm changing it, because I do agree, political, because it can get the wrong, you know, it's not necessary, and I wish people that, I hope if they're listening, this I hope, if they're on Facebook and they have to do something political, I think they shouldn't, because I really don't think it's necessary to put bad things in about any party or whatever, and just let's move on and hope that we have everybody getting healthy and well, and really concentrate on the health of people, not other things. So I'm hoping that eventually, whatever this is in history, I'm not going to be doing shows on it, I don't think, because it's a problem. And when I see posts, sometimes I hide them because I don't want them on my wall, because I just don't think it's a good thing to do, you know. And so I'm hoping maybe people won't do it as much. I mean, we started out with Facebook and all this. It was kind of a way of communicating and, you know, meeting people and having some fun and just, you know, learning new things and not sad, you know, or bad. Because I've seen a lot of sad stuff, so I don't do that either. I just put on very little about me. It's my books or my characters or whatever. So, you know, and I don't, you know, I think all, you know, like Dick, okay, you cancel, you've had things canceled that are things that you always do when a book comes out.
Right.
So
right.
This for you is going to be a difficult. So what kind of social media are you using these days?
Well, yeah. So, just real quickly to show, so every year, pretty much the past few years, I've gone to most of the major conferences. I mean, I've run into both of you, you know, at them, but I mean, I pretty much go to like at least a half dozen every year, and it's fun because it's travel, but so far this year, Malice Domestic, which would have been, I guess, this weekend, is now that's been canceled. Obviously, Thriller Fest is canceled, VoucherCon, Deadly Ink, which is one I used to go to in New Jersey, has been canceled. So they're pretty much all gone. I also had a big launch party that was scheduled for the Mysterious Bookshop here in Manhattan, which is like this great place in downtown Manhattan, and of course that's closed, so that isn't going to happen. So, so you know, and obviously I'm doing a lot of social media. I'm working with my publisher and the idea of possibly doing a virtual launch on Zoom, you know, where I'm talking to people on screen and all that stuff. And, you know, there's been things like that. I'm doing a lot of stuff on social media in terms of interviews and blog posts and all that kind of stuff. But what you lose is, to me, which is probably one of the best things about being an author, is that kind of personal one-on-one touch you get with readers. You know, people always talk about selling one book at a time to one reader. But if you go to these things, and it's like you'll get, you know, even if you're not like a best-selling author, you'll get somebody that comes up to you and they go, you know, I read your book, I really liked it, when's your next one coming out, and how did you write it? You know, and you'll wind up having conversations with people and talking to people about the book or them or you or anything.
I think that's the greatest thing about being an author is having someone mention your character like they're a person. This I love.
Yeah. I love especially is when I've run into this a couple times where people actually know more about your character and your book than you you do? Like they've corrected me and they've said something like, well, and I'll say, no, no, and they go, no, no, don't you remember in the third book you did this? And I go, oh, my God, I did. You're right. You know, because they're like, got they got, and you know, it's such a compliment. But that's what I really miss. I miss the great things about the conferences where you saw not only other authors but fans.
Yeah.
But like I say, going to a book signing or going to an event at a bookstore, and, you know, all these people, the mystery field is one of these areas, I guess maybe science fiction is sort of like this too, where you have people who are so focused and obsessed on the field and the
yeah.
area, and they're so, they really care so much about the books, and they ask you questions, and they sometimes criticize you, and they'll come up and say, oh, I wish you hadn't done that with the character. But all of that is great, you know, and that's a lot harder to do when you can't meet people in person.
Yeah, I think, well, like Fran, I know one thing I always say on all my shows a lot, because Fran has this remarkable, it's a trait, and it's really, she understands everybody's characters and books.
Yeah.
And very few people do that. I mean, you know, when Fran has a show, she talks about the characters, but she actually understands what authors write, even when the authors don't understand what they write.
Right.
You know, sometimes, because she does give that. And, you know, because sometimes somebody will get through with a book, and then you'll say, like, what really is the book about? And they'll go, well, and then, you know, because when you have a lot of characters in books, it is, I think it's, for me, it's really difficult to write a log line or, you know, just a couple sentences. I find that harder than writing a whole book. So, and, but Fran seems to understand. Do you, Fran, want to have anything to say about that? Because when you read the book,
you know what I
they
do?
All say that on your show.
Yeah, I do. I surprise myself sometimes. I'll sit down and I'll read like half the book. I just finished Winter of the Wolf by Margaret Handler, and I said, okay, now what am I going to say about this? How am I going to start this review? And I'll just go inside and think about it for 20 minutes in my head.
Yeah.
And then I'll come out and go, wait a minute, I got this. This is going to be really different. Because I think when you're writing a review and you want the author to know that you actually read the book and understand it,
yeah.
you don't
yeah.
want to write, this book is about that. It would put me to sleep. So my beginning of my, including yours, Dick, which you see it on Tuesday, it has to say something. But I have to tell you, it's my course of my reading professor. When I took my second master's in reading, I learned how to look past what's on the page and deep down into what the book was supposed to say. And obviously I must have done right, because there were only 35 people in the class, and myself and one other were the only ones, he said, that had brains. And I just looked at him and I go, well, that's good. At least I'm not one of the ones that don't have brains. And, yeah, he failed everybody else. But yeah,
well, so you have to get
do.
Sometimes you get deep into the – sometimes, you know, you a lot of times people, when they're writing reviews, you know that they haven't read the book. So
that is a
bad thing. And I actually, you know, Fran knows what's happened over the years, but I don't give review, because I was a WGA agent and I never thought it was right to do reviews on things. And so, and then when I started doing shows 10 years ago, I go, maybe I shouldn't be doing the reviews, because that's really not what I do. And then I've done a couple, and then they took them off. And I'm thinking, like, what? They took them off because I know I don't know the person. They just were someone that maybe listened to my show or is on a Facebook friend. But they took it off. So I went, like, this is not happening. I'm not going to do it again. And I know everybody and their brother is worrying about how many reviews they have. I cannot let this get to me, because I am not – a lot of people say – oh, you read my book, I'll read yours. No, I don't want to do that. I don't really want that. I don't think it's the right thing. You know, just because I read your book, you're going to read mine. And if I give you a good review, you'll give me one just in case you don't like it. Then that's not right. So I think that's going on out there. Dick, do you review books, Dick, at all for people?
I don't. No, I don't. I've been asked to. I do interviews. I'm a contributing editor for the Big Thrill magazine, which is the International Thriller Writers, and that's pretty cool because I've gotten to interview a lot of big name authors. You know, Michael Conley and Felipe Ryan and people, and so. But these are interviews. They're not reviews. And I've been asked, but I mean, to be honest, that's something I don't have time. And again, like I get uncomfortable because, like, I have tastes just like everybody has tastes, and there are a lot of people who I'm sure are very good, but I don't particularly. I'll read their book, and I'm not a fan of it. Now there are other people
right,
I love.
Right, exactly.
You know, like, I'll read
right,
everything
exactly.
by Michael Conley. But I would just like to say, because I don't know how much time we have left here, since
yep,
Fran mentioned that she's going to be doing my book on Tuesday, I just want to pitch my book here. So just let me just tell you a little bit about that, because and that'll get more people to read Fran's review than on Tuesday when it comes out, which I'm sure will be hopefully will be good. So just real quickly,
you have time. Don't worry.
Right, my book, The Last Scoop, which combines stuff about my media background with obviously my mystery interest. And so when I was a very young man, I was at the New York Post. I was there when Son of Sam happened. So, you know, the idea of chasing after a serial killer has always been something I've thought about, how a big city media goes after it, and everything gets, how much intensity there is. So this book is basically about my character, a woman journalist, Claire Carlson, TV journalist, chasing after a serial killer. And the difference here is that this serial killer is the exact opposite of most of the serial killers that you see in movies, who, you know, like write taunting letters to the press, and they have a name, they're the Zodiac or Son of Sam, and I'm going to kill more, and, you know, you're not going to catch me and all that. And my serial killer is basically somebody who's under the radar, who's been killing individual people from a number of years, but nobody has ever put the murders together. It's a serial killer. So, you know, the line is he's the most terrifying kind of serial killer. He's a serial killer you don't even know exists. And my character is the one who discovers this link and then has to attempt to, you know, go after him. So, you know, it was a lot of fun to write. And like I say, I draw a lot on my own media experience in doing this, and you know, hence the title, The Last Scoop.
But I think that that's a good thing, because when you're writing, because when you've done this, and you know, it does help the book have credibility because then people say, like, oh, what does he know about that, or what does she know about that? But you do know about it, because, you know, people say, yeah,
well,
I
do.
You know, I don't
and
care usually, but you know, but people, you did this, so you know it.
Well, that's one thing. I never, because I was writing a book about being a lawyer or a police detective. Somebody might say, oh, that's not really what happened.
Right.
You know, and
But
in writing a book about a newsroom, I know what happens. Now, having said that, I should also point out that when people, I get a kick sometimes when people will say, wow, you know, you've really given us a totally accurate portrayal of what happens in a newsroom. And the truth is, it isn't, because it's an exaggerated portrayal, because most days in a newsroom, you come in and you put in 8 hours and you do some boring stories and you may go home, and sometimes you have good stuff, but it's like any job. You know, not every day is exciting stuff that happens, but you don't do that in a book. So in a book, you're able to take that and kick it up. And, you know, my story on this that I always loved and remembered when I think about this, it was from Raymond Chandler. And, you know, somebody, a critic once said about Philip Marlowe, well, you know, it's not really realistic, like it's a private eye, because no private eye gets hit over the head every time he walks in a room or has a beautiful blonde, you know, coming in as a client. I mean, it's just not realistic. And Chandler's response was, you're absolutely right, it's not realistic at all. But if I wrote about what a private eye really does, you know, sitting going over divorce papers, nobody would read me. So that's kind of what we all do. We take things that are real, but then we make them into a story. You know, you do that in a TV show, you do it in a movie, and you do it in a novel. And apparently people are going to want to like
things like this now, because Perry Mason is coming back. They're doing I think there's a new series going to be. Not, you know, I forgot who
I'm worried
the actor
about
is.
That. Doesn't that worry you though a bit? Because the old Perry Mason was so wonderful. I'm still watching the reruns on TV.
But I think the one thing it'd be interesting to see, because they actually went day to day into the murderer and what they did and the little things that you don't always see sometimes when you're seeing it on TV. They show a lot of murder and a lot of blood and things, but not actually how they're figuring out who really did it. you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And so that might be interesting for a change because, you know, I noticed myself watching some stuff and I'm going like, I mean, there's so much blood sometimes. It's like I'm going like, really? And I was a lab tech. Blood doesn't bother me, but it's like, oh, my God, they're just slashing and they're killing. I mean, on shows that actually, I don't even know, it probably shouldn't even be in the show, but it is. And you see this a lot, so maybe people will be ready to just solve a murder like he does, you know. And because,
you
say, what goes on and what you're solving, you are solving something, and it takes time. So that's why it's interesting when you write, because you're going into the not only the murder or what happened, but you're also going into the person that is doing, like, you know, the character. You are doing twofold. So you're understanding the murder, but you're also understanding the person that is investigating. So
that's interesting. When a show does that well, I mean, like, that's what Law and Order did for years, because you not only saw the murder, but you saw the prosecution, you saw everything. So, I'm a huge fan of the original pairing. The trouble is, because Raymond Burr was so amazing in that role, it'll depend on who plays the role and how they do it, and, you know, whether or not you buy that. But the great thing about watching the Perry Masons, which are on, like, twice a day now because, you know, we have a lot of time to watch them, but they're on, like, MeTV here in the East. And the great thing about them is it's such a simpler world because it's all set, like, in the kind of the late 50s, early 60s of L.A., and it's real escapist. You know, even though people are being killed, there's a certain kind of escapist calm you get by watching them.
Well, it's not multiple usually, you know what I mean? It's one person or whatever, and they're also describing, you're watching them, and you're watching them in the courtroom. It's not just the last line, you know. So like you said, like, you know, some of the older shows are like that. You know, Law and Order was like that. You watch them, you know, go through everything. So I think I think it's going to probably do okay. You know, who knows? I mean, I don't really know. That could be a difference because now there's so much on TV. I have Hulu now, I have Netflix, I have all these things. I'm going like, I'll have Apple. I mean, it's like, and then you look and you don't even know what to watch anymore. You know,
Everybody tells you stuff, you know, and they'll be like, oh, if you watch this show, and then you'll be watching that, and then somebody else, oh, you got to watch this on Netflix, Amazon Prime.
I know.
And, so you...
Do you have any favorites?
Like right now,
do you have favorites? Do you have favorites?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've been finally watching, and I'm behind on this. I finally caught up with Ozark, which is on Netflix.
I love Ozark.
And Fran, do you watch Ozark? Fran?
I watch books. I don't have time to watch television. I have all these people that are driving me crazy to read books, but then, you know, there are some programs that I watch that are just for the sake of watching something that's not intelligent and that doesn't require that I have to actually think.
Yeah.
Ozark,
the characters are incredibly good.
They're wonderful
characters.
But you know, it's kind of
we don't have Netflix in up here. We don't have Netflix on my television. It doesn't like me either.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about a lot of these shows, and Ozark is certainly one of them, is they're very intense though. And it's great acting and great stories.
I know they are intense. Yeah,
and you can't, as somebody said to me, I was talking with them the other day, they said, you can't be kind of like doing your dishes or working on something.
No,
like that. You've got to watch it. Yeah.
See, it's funny you said that, because I have shows that I can watch when I'm doing something. But then I have shows that I can't, like Homeland, I need to watch it.
I haven't watched this one this season yet. That's my next. But that's another one. It's so intense.
So I have shows, and I've heard people say that I do that. Because some shows, you know, and then actually what I've done lately is sometimes if I'm clicking and I'm going like, oh, I don't want to watch this. There's like 10, 20, I don't know, 10 series or whatever. But then I go back and watch some of the ones that I did watch, you know, like Mad Men, and I always loved Mad Men. And so when I rewatch it, I'm seeing so much more. It's such an insight that I didn't get the first time, because when you watch things over and over, like if you're doing, let's say, 10, like 6 in a row, it's so different than watching it once a week you know, on TV, then you might have forgotten some of the scene. But then when they do, and you're watching it over and over, you say, oh, and I didn't realize a lot of the things that I did the second time around, you know.
Yeah.
And so
no,
I think that's kind of interesting.
Did you ever watch The New Pope? That I loved.
Yeah,
that's one
for
of
a minute.
People.
But then
that,
I didn't.
That,
I know I have
that.
A lot of them I watch for a minute, and then I'm done. Because then
yeah.
I go
oh, I love
on
the new,
to something
the new,
else.
The New Pope was really a great series. I like that.
That was with Jude Law.
My husband likes The Office, which I don't like. He loves
yeah.
The Office for some reason. I
you
think
mean the you mean the sitcom The Office?
Yeah, this I hate it.
Yeah, because you know
like,
what? It, because that's an escape. You know, and I actually
yeah,
sometimes, you know, sometimes I say let's
like
watch
it.
Something light because a lot of them are intense. You know, they really
yeah.
are.
So if you
want to
watch something
you know,
light, watch American Idol. You can. I left my head off last night because Katy Perry got dressed up like a hand sanitizer.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I just looked at her and I go, like, how could you? I mean, the music was not great. The talent was, they think it's great. I think it was mediocre.
Well,
I
you know, right
major,
now
so
I think
I
this
know.
Is actually what people need. They need this right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, I know. That's why
like
I watched
that.
It because I figured I
yeah,
have to
right.
choice later.
You know,
and see,
so
and I voted,
well,
too.
Yeah, yeah. So at the end of the day, so Dick, is there something we missed that you want to talk about your book or were you, you know, anything else?
No, the only
we should
other
look
thing
for?
That I'd mention, and you and I talked about this beforehand, yeah. was in addition to this book, which I read under my own name, I have another series,
yeah.
Which are written under the pen name of Dana Perry. And there's a book out, which you've read, Marcia, and you've read too,
yes.
Fran, called The Silent Victim. And
yeah.
That came out, and that's online, and these are online books mostly, and they're very cheap to buy. I think you can buy them for like. You know,
and if you have the Audible, you have Audible, you can
yes,
use a
free,
credit
right?
for Audible. That's what I do, you know,
right,
for
right.
Audible. You know,
and
I
got a
I,
new one coming out in June, which is called The Golden Girl, and that will be out in June. So
you know,
if you read,
you have
read
another,
one of my books.
Because you're using. You're using Dana Perry. All right, I just want to ask you a question on this. Now,
mm-hmm.
you're using. Do you think you write differently when you write under her name?
What his? Dana is a kind
his.
Of a
well,
man.
Oh, yours is a
yeah,
his.
Dana
well,
is a,
yeah,
like
true.
Dana Carvey and things. I
was thinking.
I don't write
yeah,
differently
yeah,
because of the name, not because of the name, but I write differently because of the character. So, in other words,
mm-hmm.
my character as Dana Perry is a newspaper reporter, and I had this discussion with Fran on her show, I think, last week. And so there's some, you know, they're both journalists. They both live in New York. So there's some similarities, but there has to be differences. It can't be the same character. And
mm-hmm.
so my character, Jesse Tucker, in the Dana Perry books, I write differently than my Claire Carlson character. I would say the biggest difference between them, as I said to Fran, is I think Jesse is a little nicer person than Claire. Because Claire is very high driving, and she can be a pain. Where Jesse is much more, a bit more vulnerable. But they're both, I think, pretty cool characters. But so I do write differently, but not because of my name.
I was thinking
of
Dana as a woman. See, I was thinking of Dana
yeah.
as a woman.
No, it's a name that's supposed to, you know, that's, you know, like, you know, there, you know, like Dana Carvey, you know, it's
yeah,
a, it's
because
one of these names
I'll
that works for either.
Yeah. This is the thing, I mentioned to you before, because of all the shows I've had, everybody has, like, gives different names, and I tried different names, and then I went back to my own name, and now I think I'm going to go under Max Irving again, maybe, which is a name I used to use, because I used it as a man's name, because for me, and this was many years ago, I thought it was just easier to be a man than a woman in that time. So, you know, I mean, there's all kind of reasons why people, you know, do different names, you know. But I think
yeah.
people sometimes write differently, you know, because I have a lot of people that they never use their regular name, ever. They just
yeah.
don't
a lot of
times
it's a marketing
anything.
It's a marketing thing.
Yeah.
In this case, I had
yeah.
written under R.G. Belsky, and they wanted it to sound like a different kind of character. But no, it's Dana Perry is me. I mean, it's on my website who I am and everything.
Right, right. I know
because
you're not right because it's not that
pretending
because it's not a secret.
It's not a secret. That's just the name.
Right, that's the thing
that I do these under. Yeah.
Yeah, I think sometimes people do, after a while, say, all right, well, this is me, you know. And that's why Fran knows I did this. I was writing as a different name. And then I changed my mind because I kept talking about it on the show, and it was like I was so confused myself by who I really was that I just went, oh, fine, it's Marcia Casper Cook. That's the end of it, you know. But I kind of like writing in different names, and I think that a lot of authors do, you know, and I just wondered what the voice was.
In my case, it's never been a decision on my part. It's been a decision
right,
on the publisher's
part. Right,
okay,
so that
part.
Was,
And, I mean, and even RG, this all started, like, back in the 90s. This was, and I had written a series of books under Dick Belsky, and then I had written a book with a female character, and the publisher at the time, which was Avon, said, well, we want to use initials, you know, like J.A. Jantz or something like that.
Well, right, I remember that
because
they didn't
want to
know who you were, man or woman. It didn't,
right. So they thought, we'll just, like, leave it up in the air so it's not clear. And I go, okay, whatever, and I agree to let them do it. And then, of course, they put my picture on the book, which kind of defeated the purpose of the whole thing.
Exactly, right?
But
that's
how I wound up being R.G. Belsky. And then later they were like, oh, we'll just keep that anyway, you know.
So these aren't strange.
These aren't well thought out plans a lot of times. They just happen, yeah.
Well, right. Well, people that know me after a while know that I have no plan, that I change. Well, I do change all the time, you know, on what I'm thinking, what I'm doing, you know. But I do love shows and that. And Fran, is there anything you'd like to say at the end of the day here that we can say on the air?
I'm going to still be Fran Lewis, so maybe I'll just change it to F. Lewis, or maybe I'll just call myself the Great Reviewer.
There you go.
No,
that's the one thing people need is a review.
But if you look at your book review on Tuesday, you'll know you won't know it's me, because I don't use my real name, because I don't want Amazon to know it's me.
And I should point out that I will be on Fran's show next Tuesday.
Yes, you will.
So a week from today. So.
Yeah, so that's early in the morning. This is This is actually earlier an hour for me, but Fran is an early bird. Like, sometimes at night, if I know Dickie were up late the other night when I was emailed. But Fran, I remember when we first met, like, I would be up sometimes till like 2 or 3, and then Fran would be on there, and I'd go, like, what are you still doing up? She goes, oh, no. She goes, I've been to bed. She's been to bed and up at 3 in the morning. You know, we all have different styles.
Yeah, because somebody needed help with homework or something and said, could you please help me? Basically, it was my nephew that before we graduated college, and he liked to annoy me at 2:00 in the morning and say, "I have a term paper that you have to help me write, but first we have to listen to College Humor," which I thought was hilarious.
Yes.
And I just wanted. I said, "Are you kidding me? 2:00
it's
in the morning?
Difference.
Well, you know, I got to write this." Go, no, you have to write it. But you know,
it is sometimes weird how these assignments. The assignments that some of the kids are coming up with now are really truly. Yeah, I mean, it's like, really? I mean, so it's kind of weird the way they are educating, but hopefully it works. I don't know.
Sort of.
We'll see how that goes.
Sort of.
But,
sort of.
You know, and your book will be out next week?
Tuesday.
I can't believe it.
Tuesday.
It's so weird because it's May. It's like, I feel like
I
know.
Like, you know, it's weird. I feel like it was February, and then now it's whatever.
Well,
we
miss spring because we haven't been able to go out and enjoy spring, you know, so that's the thing. But, yes, it'll be – but, you know, obviously you can order it online from all the places, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can get it – I mean, you can order print copies where you can get the the e-book.
Right.
It's just – what I feel badly about is that, I would really be – I'll really be happy when bookstores are able to go because we miss bookstores, you know.
You know, and actually I heard somebody say to me, in the Chicago Public Library system, they are shocked at how many people are actually doing e-books now from the library. And which is a good thing, because nobody was even going to use books at the library as much. They were going online, but now I guess they're going into the library. They mentioned that today in the news, so I think that was a kind of good thing that people are reading, you know, so
well,
it's good for all authors.
I don't know about yours. Ours is closed.
Well, maybe their ebook section is. I'm sure it's closed.
No,
everything's
closed. Everything's closed.
But I think, you know, they could tell the numbers, the stats on what's going in and out of that, you know, the ebooks. And, you know, because it's, you know, listen, whatever it takes, people should, we're all on here agreeing on one thing, I'm sure. Read. Read. And read.
Yeah. And you can still read. You can still read. And I have been doing what I probably do. I have been going through my books that are here, which I've got a lot of them, and rereading a few books that I like. And go, oh, that's interesting too. You know, so
that's a good thing sometimes. Right. That's what I did too. Yeah, I think, you know, listen, I think we're all being very creative on the things that we do. And, you know, we're going like, oh, yeah, I can do this. And then we know, you know, because there's like, you don't have to have a time. It's so unusual to be not on a time schedule, you know. Is it dinner time or we could wait an hour? I mean, it's no big deal.
And the weekend and the weekend really doesn't mean anything, you know. So.
I know. Oh, well, you know, what can we say? Hopefully we'll be off this soon. I think, and I have a show on Thursday with Bennett Pomeranz and Elizabeth Black, and Thursday at 3, hopefully. And we're going to all get through this. So, all right, Dick, thank you so much for being on.
I wish you
success with the book, and I'll be listening to it. It'll be an audio, right? Audio book? Yeah, too?
I hope it will be. I don't know if it is yet, but hopefully it will be. And well, thank you. And, Fran, I'll talk to you soon.
Yes, you will on Tuesday.
And Fran, Tuesday, right. Tuesday, what time, Fran? You can tell everybody what time.
10 o'clock, 10 a.m. on MJ Network. MJ stands for My Sister Marcia Joyce, who I miss. And, yeah, so I decided to name my network after her and my magazine after her, MJ Magazine,
right,
to keep her memory alive. Yeah, and maybe someday I'll write a book just called MJ.
That would be a good idea.
Yeah,
and, you know, and then Fran, Fran does reviews before we go off. So, Fran, if somebody wants to send you a review, I mean, send you a book, are you still taking books for reviews?
If somebody wants to send me a book, private message me on Facebook. It's better than me giving you my email address. And then if you have a print copy, you know, just let me know. I'll add it to my pile when it comes.
Right. I think you'll get them soon. I do think so. You know, I think it'll just take a little.
I'll open the door I'll open my door one day and there'll be 35 books outside,
right.
And I won't know which one to read first. But of course, if it's, you know, one of yours, what can I say?
Everybody, stay well, stay safe, and stay well. And hopefully, this will be over soon. All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.